You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig. Hi, everybody.
Welcome to January.
Oh, don't nice, even say the word.
Cold.
The longest 6 months of the year.
College football has ended in amazing fashion.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
With an Alabama butt kicking.
That is so beautiful.
Loved it. Loved it all the way. But hey, before we get started, as always, hey guys, we cover stats. Joseph is a stat head. We need stats in our iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play reviews. So if you can give us some five-star reviews, that'd be great. If you can't, please reach out to us. Let us know why. And
it's
and otherwise,
me, isn't it?
If
it's
you want to give
me.
Us, it is you. If you want to give feedback, let us know. We'd love to hear from you at Ute Talk Podcast on Twitter. You can find Joseph and I respectively on Twitter as well. Grant TBS, Jay Silverswig over there, and then also email utetalk@gmail.com. So reach out to us. Let us know. Just to give you a heads up of what we got today, we got the quick hitters, review some schedule, some other, you know, quick hitting news, of course, thus the segment name.
Quick hitters.
Yeah. Sometimes we aren't
too quick,
though.
The idea is that we hit them quickly.
Yes.
We're trying to help encourage ourselves to move on to the next thing.
Yes.
We like to talk.
That's the
goal. That's why we're here.
That's true. All right. And then we're going to talk about the OC situation. With the Utes today, we've got, you know, three known candidates. What do we think of them? Any kind of things you guys might want to know? Heck, we've heard that announcement is coming close, so maybe it'll break during the show is kind of what I'm hoping for, but we'll see what happens. And then we'll talk into basketball and what was a good weekend for the Running Utes basketball team. So
desperately needed a good weekend.
Yeah. Speaking of that, they've got Washington coming up tomorrow. They will be playing on FS1, so nationally televised. Good, you know, good TV pickup, better than the Pac-12 network, I think. But nonetheless, playing Washington at 8 p.m. a little late tip, but that's also at the Huntsman Center. So if you got tickets and get there on time, get ready to cheer. Good game to start on FS1, and then. There is some rivalry week this week, not just one.
Oh, I mean, just barely, right?
Well, hold on a second.
Okay, what are they?
So there's men's tennis.
Okay, well, that's probably
Let's all get excited. I mean, sorry, men's tennis team. Please contact the show. We'd love to hear from you.
You guys could, the whole team, just come on in.
We might be able to fit them in here.
I don't know how many there are.
Either way.
I've got a great tennis story. It's too long of a story for the show, but
maybe an off season.
My father played tennis at Clark University, and it's a very good story. Maybe I'll get to it at some point when we really have nothing to talk about.
Story time with Grant and Joseph. Either way, so men's tennis is taking on BYU this weekend, as well as the women's gymnastic rivalry meet is happening this week. Like you said, Joseph, not much of a matchup.
No, I mean, there's this the gap between those two teams. I would say maybe roughly equivalent to like the gap between Alabama and UAB in football. I mean, it's just not. They're technically in the same division,
right.
But one of them is a perennial national championship contender, and the other one is just, you know, it's kids having fun and
right.
Doing cool stuff, and I'm. More power to him, but not on the same level at all.
Okay, so there's that. Women's basketball as well is doing the Washington team. So they've got Washington State first, then playing Washington. You know, men's basketball, Washington, as I said earlier, Washington State on
Saturday.
The
ladies have lost a couple of heartbreakers.
They lost in overtime.
Yeah, really close ones.
Last second shot went loss.
And then they lost a player to injury,
yeah,
an important starting player. Last name of Provo, which I always enjoyed having a Provo on the Utes, but she looks like blew out
her knee
ligaments, yep. And out for the season. So yeah, and maybe career ending.
It's an unfortunate injury. We wish her Miss Provo the best, getting better. And I mean the women's team's still looking solid, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully they can. Recover from the losses and get some wins against Washington State. Other quick hitters, we've had some transfers out of the Utah football program. The ones I'm aware of, you add any or correct me if I'm wrong here, Joseph, is Siouxsie Mariner is a grad transfer transferring out. You got Jake Grant, who my understanding is a backup tackle.
Yeah, he's
pretty
he's
far down the depth, the depth chart. And then Chris Hart as well transferring.
Yeah, and you may remember Chris Hart was a linebacker, defensive end prospect. Good players didn't really Chris Hart did develop physically the way he was expected to, so he wound up kind of like Devere Hamilton, who's also transferring, kind of a tweeter, too small to play defensive end, too big to play linebacker, and, you know, other issues as well, I'm sure. Really, I don't know, we're sensitive to the transfer thing because of Coach Kruskowiak, I think, but
But this is football.
But this is just what good programs do. Players transfer out. These are not high-impact players. The only impactful transfer this season is a quarterback who shall remain nameless. This is just, you know, wish him the best. You know, Godspeed, kids. Go find somewhere that you can play football and have a good time and go get that second degree. They're all graduate transfers. So they've all gotten their bachelor's, which is awesome for them.
Yeah, totally. And I fully encourage kids, like, go get that degree. I love that Zach Moss quoted that, as much as I think it might be number two or number three on his list to why he's staying. But so glad that he mentioned
it. Yeah, he got a lower second round grade. Mm-hmm. And that's a really risky spot to be, because your first second round, you're a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into third round, you get shorter contracts, lower guarantees, lower bonuses. And he certainly is a first round talent. I think if he finishes the season healthy, he'll be one of the top two or three running backs taken. Especially if the Utes hire an offensive coordinator who is willing to give him the GD ball 28 plus times a game. Whoa. It's not that hard. Zone left, zone right, zone left, read option. That's how you should be calling the Utes.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway. Before we get to the offensive coordinator, which everyone thought, oh, there's a transition.
I know. I was so pleased that here you are.
I'm backtracking because there was something else you wanted to talk about.
Oh, all right.
The man, the myth, the legend of Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, yeah. This is just really worth talking about.
And a few weeks' time turned a losing season.
Can you imagine NFL job? Going 5-7 at Texas Tech? Which is a good job, but not a great job.
True.
And then within the next 45 days, you get fired, become the offensive coordinator for the USC Trojans, and then the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals in the NFL. I mean, with no success track record, they're just flying out there hoping for the – I can't remember his name – the head coach of the Rams, kind of the same kind of hire.
Yeah,
right?
Really young.
Young, innovative mind, saying maybe we can just blow up how offense works in the NFL again. High-risk hire. But the important news for Utes fans is Utah is trying very, very hard to flip Samson Nakua's brother, Puka, who is one of the top 5 or 10 players in the entire country. He is an extraordinarily talented wide receiver. Think Darren Carrington out of high school. I mean, that at least that level of talent. Won several national awards, first team All-American nationally. Very, very exciting player. And he's close. It's kind of a touch and go thing. He's got a really good relationship with his brother. He's been working on him really hard. But he was very excited to play football for offensive wizard Cliff Kingsbury.
Right.
And now he doesn't get to, and he doesn't even know who his offensive coordinator is going to be. He doesn't know who his quarterback's coach is going to be. So it puts USC and Utah on much more even footing.
You meant wide receivers coach?
Yes, that's right. Wide receivers coach. Much more even footing than they would have been a week ago or 3 days ago.
Right. It's interesting because it
opens the door a little bit wider to get that player, which would be an absolutely huge get, especially if Darren Jones can't pass his classes this summer.
Well, hopefully Darren Jones can. However, you know, it's interesting because you bring up Puka and the offensive coordinator and how it
influenced his decision to go to USC. And here we are, the Utes are without an offensive coordinator as well. And there's three candidates that have really come to the forefront, right? And everyone that's listening to this show knows who they are. It's Harding, obviously, Andy Ludwig, and Steve Sarkisian. And which of those three it's going to be is the question. Mm-hmm. Now, personally, you know, the way I see things, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me, is that the Steve Sarkisian one was a hot little rumor that was going there.
Well, I think there's interest, and I think there's mutual interest, but it's been a week since there was buzz, and that suggests that they first, for a variety, either the interest wasn't as mutual as they thought, or the numbers right. didn't add up, or something like that. But the Utes hired Cole Swan out of Weber State for linebackers coach, because you'll remember Gary Anderson took Ina with him to be his defensive coordinator.
And took Justin Ina.
Yeah. Well, you know, he gets to be a defensive coordinator. So he took him with him and left that position open. And Utah could have made a splashier hire, you know, with more recruiting contacts and things. Although worth saying, Swan's a good in-state recruiter, has had a lot of success. But they didn't, which I think is probably a money move. There's a lot of room in the budget to make a big-time hire at offensive coordinator. And for both Sarkisian or Ludwig, you're talking high six figures, close to $1 million a year to get those guys to come play.
I'm intrigued. So that's kind of like the Steve Sarkisian thing. It seems like things have cooled. So I'm kind of putting him to the side.
Yeah, we'll talk about him. We'll get to him. What's interesting about it is I was hearing absolutely uniformly from everybody I know, oh, it's going to be Harding. Witt really likes Harding. He's just going to put Harding in there. And that didn't happen.
Right.
Which suggests to me that somebody else said, actually, we're going to do a national coaching search and we're going to make a big-time hire, and has kind of taken over. And I don't know what that dynamic looks like. I don't have any inside information on that. But it sounds like to me, sort of surmising, that Mark Harlan is making a point of changing the trajectory of the Utes offense, which I think is exactly the right thing to do and the kind of thing Chris Hill wouldn't do.
Totally. And the thing is Hill wouldn't have done it, but Harlan's the new guy and can do it. And I'm sorry, it's called track record. Whittingham has a track record.
Yeah. We replace an offensive coordinator every 2 years for one reason or another, and that's not good. The offense has been better lately.
True. And here's the thing.
And the talent is better. But
I won't bash on Whittingham for this situation that we're in where the OC leaves for a head coach, right? But good for Troy Traylor. If that's what he wants and it works better for him and he's in Sacramento and blah blah blah. Like, if you're moving for that reason, sure.
But a track record is a track record, and this is part of the pattern.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a good opportunity for Mark Harlan to say, I'm going to put my fingers in this pie. I'm going to make a great hire. I'm going to demonstrate to everybody that I know how to do this, give fans and boosters a lot of confidence in my leadership, and make the team better than Coach Whittingham would hiring from within or going with somebody he's really comfortable with.
Right. Well, and I kind of see the Andy Ludwig hire as the in-between.
Right. It's a concession to Whittingham's preference for knowing the people that he hires, certainly. Well,
okay, yeah. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. Never mind.
And I would say knowing – I don't know. I find it really interesting that we so strenuously criticize a hiring habit that we wish every other person – in a position of power had the habit of hiring people from within and that they knew, because it's frustrating when you work at a job and there's an opening senior to you and you don't even get considered for it. I think that happens to a lot of people in professional space. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a good trait of Whittingham's, although sometimes it can be frustrating when things haven't been successful.
True. Here's what I was going to say is that Ludwig and Whittingham have that relationship already, and yet he's an SEC OC, he's got tons of experience.
It has been for 5 years.
Yep.
And Vanderbilt. So
he's got a lot more. You know, I don't know. I think that's the middle of the ground. It's a bigger hire if Harlan's trying to say that. And Ludwig and Winningham already have a relationship. They've worked together. I mean, he went out with the Sugar Wolf team. I mean, that's not.
Yeah, that was his, that was no, that was his last his la- the last game that he coached for the Utes was the Sugar Bowl against Nick Saban, which is
the fourth greatest.
There's a very short list of times that Nick Saban has gotten his ass kicked, and that's one of
that's
them.
That's one of them.
Yeah, and it was Andy Ludwig,
yep,
and Brian Johnson who did. I mean,
gone done.
Credit to the defense certainly, but that was a the offense performed exceptionally well at that.
That would be a big splash hire right there.
Yeah,
hire Ludwig and then hire Johnson as the QB coach.
I would love that. I think going back to the Brian Johnson well for offensive coordinator. I know people have a bad memory of that, and fans would hate it, but he has...
Yeah, I don't know if you can get me on board with that yet.
But he has a lot of ability. The trouble with Brian Johnson as quarterback's coach is he's making, I think, $520,000 a year where he is now.
Is he with Florida?
I think he's with Florida, and that may even have gone up. So there is not the budget at the Utes. The Utes do not have the budget to hire him at a rate commensurate with that for quarterback's coach. If they're going to pay him more than he's making, he has to be the offensive coordinator because that's the only person they can justify paying $750,000 to, which I think is probably too much for Brian Johnson right now. But I wouldn't hate that hire. I think Andy Ludwig's the better hire. So the my takeaway number one is Mark Harlan is involved, which yeah. I think is a good thing, not a bad thing, certainly. Takeaway number two is that fans are not going to love, I don't think, the Andy Ludwig hire. But he did really good things at Vanderbilt. I mean, you have to remember Vanderbilt is playing at a massive, massive talent disadvantage.
True.
You know, they do.
Well, that's fun.
I have no idea what just happened there. Is it recording?
Freaking pop-up ads when I'm researching. Oh, man.
Sorry, guys. I don't know, actually, if you can hear that. But
oh, man. Awesome.
I think Grant is over there watching YouTube
just totally ignoring your analysis. Uh-huh. No, I was trying to look up Brian Johnson's actual salary.
I found the page.
I looked it up earlier this year when they were looking for a quarterback's coach, and it's north of 500. I don't remember the exact number. But the point is that turning back to Ludwig is that they have not been recruiting most of the teams in the SEC recruit at a top 10 level. Vanderbilt recruits in the 30s, 40s most of the time, sometimes creeps up into the 20s or teens, very similar to Utah in that regard. And he's put good offenses on the field. He does a nice mix of a spread offense, but with pro-style run schemes. So it's a good fit. You have the pulling guards. You have fullbacks, you have the structures in place that make that the Utah offensive line is best at, and that Zach Moss is most effective in those situations, and that Utah's style just works for. But there are still spread schemes in the passing game. There's still read option elements, so it also plays to the talent that Utah is able to get at other ends, other parts of the field. The pro style offense requires NFL tight ends and NFL wide receivers. Utah doesn't have them and isn't going to get them on any kind of regular basis. So you need to have a passing scheme that lets you use small, quick guys with good hands. We still need to work on the good hands.
Hey, no, our tight ends are pretty good.
The tight ends are great, yeah.
But they're not
NFL tight ends. They're not 6'7", 265 pounds, can block like a tackle and run like a wide receiver, right? They're not those guys that USC and Alabama and Georgia and other schools that run pro-style offenses are able to put on the field.
And that's the answer for all those fans who want to see more pro-style offense. I mean, that's part of the reason why
the talent's not there.
Pro-style offense isn't being put into place at Utah.
Yeah.
Is we just don't have that talent. Yeah, we've got the running backs for sure.
You could even argue that we don't have the running backs. I mean, how tall is Zach Moss? 5'10", 5'11". He's not really big enough to do the blocking that a pro-style offense requires a running back to do. He's not big enough to block defensive ends on a regular basis, and you need a running back who can do that to run pro-style. I mean, I think that's the thing people don't realize is we have really good players on this football team, but they are good in a way that doesn't let them do the things that a pro-style offense does. It's called pro-style for a reason. It's because everybody on your roster is a ginormous, muscle-bound freak. And if you can't do that...
They're the type of people Joseph Jules over.
Yes, but even bigger and stronger than Zach Moss, right? Zach Moss is not big enough... Hey. For a running back in a pro style
offense. You know, I thought of you the other day. I was listening to Zach Moss's interview on ESPN 700, and
bless him for coming back.
He was asked, seriously, Bo Riley asked him what he was going to do in the offseason. He's like, well, I'm just trying to bulk up and take my body to the next level. And I was like,
the only way Zach Moss could bulk up is he could go to Costco and he could buy himself a pack of top sirloin, and he could staple them on top of what he already has. I just do not see how he could possibly pack another layer of muscle on there.
He's going to get next level. I think you're going to see him next year with his shirt off and pass out.
It's possible. It's possible.
But anyway, all right, sorry, we digress.
Yeah, we're all over the place today, but we're having fun, and we're happier here with us. Ludwig has been successful. His scheme is a really good fit for the Utes. I don't think you can say the same thing about Steve Sarkisian.
Okay.
I don't think he's been as successful as he should have been given the talent that he's had on
offense.
Wasn't
he just at Alabama?
He was at Alabama and got canned really fast, really fast. In kind of a weird way. So I don't know as that was necessarily a...
Saban get crushed, I trust Saban's judgment.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that.
Right.
But it's hard to say if that was because he wasn't making a good offense or if there was some other problem there. Although you think Saban doesn't care about anything except what happens on the field. Yeah. So I don't think Sark is as good of a fit. For one, he runs pro-style offenses, which the Utes don't have the talent for.
Yeah, we just bashed that idea.
Yep. And for two, he just hasn't – if you are a great offensive coordinator and you are the head coach at the University of Southern California, you should score a bazillion freaking points a game. They have every single player they want. They have absolutely limitless talent. And there is no reason that you shouldn't be putting up 30-plus points a game constantly, effortlessly with that talent. And they didn't when he was head coach.
Yeah, true.
So for me, that suggests that's an issue, right? Whereas Ludwig has been slightly overperforming his talent. Sark, I think, has been underperforming. And I think you'd say the same thing of his time at Washington as well.
So then there's the third guy that we haven't talked about yet and what you think. So right now, Ludwig is leading Sark, but there's also Harding.
Yeah.
And
I feel like at this point, Harding's a fallback.
Yeah. I mean,
which is a sucky place to be for him.
I could have sworn last episode you said it was just a matter of time before he's hired.
And it was at that time. And so that's what makes me think that because the people that I know who are close to the program are close to the football program and not close to the administration. And so that's what makes me think that everybody was saying, it's going to be Harding, it's going to be Harding. And then Mark Harlan said, I think it's going to be somebody else. And now we're looking at other people, and that's what makes me kind of surmise, without sources really, but I think it fits the story better than anything else, that Harlan is making this offensive coordinator hire, and that he's using Ludwig, like you said, as kind of a way to build a bridge between Whittingham's preferred approach and what Harlan thinks needs to be done, which is a splashy top level hire, he's somebody who's probably going to be on a lot of people's head coaching radar if he's successful at this point, because his career has been long enough and he's been successful enough. If Utah, Zach Moss runs for 2,500 yards and Utah puts up 28, 30 points a game, people will be calling him, I think. And that's the kind of guy Harlan wants to hire, and that's the kind of people Utah should be hiring. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is if that kind of situation plays out and he's hired away,
it would be so nice for Utah's next offensive coordinator to become the head coach at Colorado State or something, because they were so successful at Utah. Yeah. I feel like that's what we want to have happen. And I think it's a bit of an overstatement to say that's what happened with Troy Taylor.
Well, yeah.
Right, because he's not the head coach at a D1 school. He's a head coach at a bad D2 school.
At least he wasn't fired.
Because he wants to live somewhere else, right. I think, and wants to maybe a little bit lower pressure. Maybe, I tell you, if it was me, I would hate recruiting. I would hate all the traveling. And if you're a coach at Sac State, you travel to, you know, the Sacramento area, and you get to know the high school coaches, and you recruit the guys that USC and UCLA and Stanford and Cal aren't recruiting. Yep. And that's where your talent comes from. Mm-hmm. And would be a lot more, I think, fun and a lot less stressful than, you know, texting 19-year-olds at 7 a.m. trying to figure out what's hip and getting on Snapchat and all that stuff.
Yeah. All right, so there's your three candidates. It's seeming like Ludwig is the...
Do you have a preference?
Do I have a preference? I don't want Sark, and I really don't want Harding. So if Ludwig's the only man left, then I'm down. Like,
so you're not excited about Ludwig?
Like, I'm meh to it. Like, and here's the deal. It's like, he's got a lot of experience, but I haven't been watching his career. I haven't gone and watched Vandy's offense. I haven't watched
the offense. Why would you go watch Vanderbilt for all the teams?
But here's the thing, though. Is like, 2008 was a great year. The Sugar Bowl year was great. But, like, my main memory of the Sugar Bowl season and the Utah offense is that so many games came down to the wire and our offense couldn't generate a ton until it was a two-minute drill and Brian Johnson had his shorter playbook and was making the calls at the line of scrimmage. That is when that offense was awesome. That's how they got up on Alabama quick, was they went into that.
Oh, yeah, all three of those touchdowns.
And those early touchdowns, mm-hmm. That's what was successful. So, like, as much as it's like, hey, this is a familiar face, he's got a style of play calling with the spread pro kind of thing going on, that'd be a good fit. Like, all of that is great and all. However, my memory of Sugar Bowl season, as much as it was an amazing season, is not like that offense was amazing. Like, and even Brian Johnson's like, the dude was an amazing two-minute drill quarterback is how I feel. And that's the clutch minutes. I mean, that's
but he wasn't pulling anyway. It wasn't like watching Kellen Moore at Boise State around that time.
Alex Smith
was a first round draft. Well, it was true, a number one draft pick, right?
I mean, this is the same offense.
That's true,
and it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe that's just the disparity of talent there. But that's like, I don't know, that offense did not blow me away.
They put up, let's see, 42 on UNLV. 58 on Utah State. Wow, I don't even remember that game. What a shellacking that was. 30 on Air Force, 37 on Weber State, 31 on Oregon State, but again, 11 points in the last 3 minutes of that game. 40 Wyoming, 49 Colorado State, that baffling New Mexico game I can't even talk about. Against TCU, which Utah should have lost that game. I mean, you lose that game 9 times out of 10 with how those two teams performed. It was amazing that Utah won that game. And the offense had performed well. Beat SDSU by 63 on SDSU, 48 on a Bronco Mendenhall Brigham Young team with that was a good Brigham Young team. That's a very impressive
points
to score.
Yeah.
And then 31 on Alabama. So I have that same impression, too, because I'm thinking about – when you say that, I'm like, yeah, New Mexico, Texas Christian, and that – what was the
– Oregon State.
And the Oregon State game. But he took it to the Mount West teams. And without what I would say – I was thinking about offensive talent on that team. There were a couple guys who got – poked at in the NFL. Freddie Brown did a little bit of time with the Bengals and Vikings, but didn't get any catches.
Yeah, no, you're right there.
So maybe I should have more respect for
So I guess that's what I'm saying. When you're looking at it, it's easy to remember those big games and the way that they were scored late, and then New Mexico, which was just like, what the heck is even happening? But thank goodness they won that game.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine the perfect season spoiled by UNM, for goodness sake? But a lot of results in here. 48 against the top 20 Bronco Mendenhall coached Brigham Young defense in that part of the 2000s is a very, very high number of points to score.
True.
Well, maybe 31 against the Crimson Tide. I mean, how many times so they talked about the largest margins of victory, right. And Utah's was the fourth largest margin of victory, correct, against Nick Saban. I'd like to see how many times Nick Saban's defenses have given up 31 points. That's a lot of points to score against Nick Saban. I don't imagine it's many times.
But just like the national title game, the Alabama team did not want to be in the Sugar Bowl.
That's right.
Okay. Well, hey, so there's another sport that's playing right now. Would you like to talk about basketball?
Yeah, because you know what? They made us look silly, didn't they? We were like, oh, it's going to be one of those development. I know, we should have done basketball first so that you football people would stick around. Because you guys, just stay. It's fun. You know,
basketball,
it's the youth.
Look,
come on.
And
also, it's January, so just take what you can get and enjoy the basketball talk, okay? Yeah, we lowered the expectations, and the Utes immediately responded to Grant and I lowering our expectations.
Heck yeah.
By beating the only good team in the Pac-12, and yet again,
well, the
coming
only good team
so close in a heartbreaking loss on the road against Arizona. How many times has Utah almost beaten Arizona on the road since joining the Pac-12? I feel like it's every year. It's so close. And then they come home, and everybody's like, man, we played them so well on the road. We're going to win this one. And they get just totally worked at home.
Yeah, I mean, look, going on the road and starting off 1-1 is a good start. And the losses to Arizona, and they beat Arizona State. Like, this is a good start to the Pac-12 season. Now, look, I know all you naysayers and negative Nancys out there are going to say something along the lines of, well, the Pac-12 isn't good this year. Well, guess what? We can't help how good they are. What we can
Arizona
help
State
is what
is
Utah
good.
Does. Well,
that's a good
they
basketball
quickly beat
team.
Kansas and then have lost and are no
they're
longer
not
ranked.
Perfect. They're not going to win the national title, but you don't beat Kansas unless you have good basketball players on your basketball team, is fair to say. And so I think it means a lot that they were able to defeat them. And then Arizona's always good. I mean, no, it's not last year's, you know, DeAndre Ayton Arizona team, but they're good. They're not a bad – I mean, they're not terrible.
Well, no, but I mean, look, it's
a down year for Arizona is still a good team.
True. And look, there's nothing, I'm not trying to bag on this weekend at all. I think there's reason to be excited. I think we'd be excited that we started the Pac-12 1-1. We beat Arizona State by 10. We lost in overtime to Arizona. And here's what I love the most. Let me pull up for you, Joseph, the three most efficient and star players in conference play.
This is the best part.
This is what we wanted to see, and now it's coming to fruition, and it makes me very happy. With a PER, and that's good grief.
It's offensive efficiency. Right. It's a conglomeration of your 3-point right. percentage and a bunch of other stuff that boils down to a number. Between, I believe it's between -1 and 1, like 1 being the most efficient and -1.
No, you can go very high.
Way
but nonetheless,
higher.
I think you're mixing up with something else. But,
okay. But
player efficiency
higher
rating
is better.
Right. The higher you go, the better you are. And Donnie Tillman is at the top
yes.
with a 35.6
yes.
PER.
Yes, living up to the
Cedric Bearfield,
who we
senior,
need so bad,
is 29.9. And Booth Gotch or both?
I don't know. We have to watch some interviews or something,
we'll
or
have to go
get a program. And get a
Gotch is at 22.4, followed by Timmy Allen at 17.9. Now, the reason I mentioned those four players is you've got who is probably your best player on the team in Donnie Tillman, most all around.
Yeah.
Defense, rebound,
I would say
shooting,
if you're trying to
jazz.
Pick out, well, like who's the next Kyle Kuzma? Who's the next
yeah.
like star guy who might make it in the NFL? It's it's Donnie Tillman.
Yeah, Donnie Tillman's that guy. Mm-hmm. The next guy that you need
the NBA.
Is,
I don't think Donnie Tillman's an NFL prospect.
Don't worry. I think we all assume that much. And then the next guy you want to perform is your senior leader, and that's Cedric Bearfield. And now he's up there. And then you want your recruiting class that we're all super excited about. We want those guys to be next. Well, there they are, Gotch and Timmy Allen. And then, unfortunately, Riley Patton has had a horrible start to the conference play, a negative 5.7.
That's bad.
PER. But before we get too excited about all these things, I will say this caveat, sample size.
Oh, yeah.
So two-game sample size, but nonetheless, those are things to be excited about. Our freshmen are performing.
The reason Utah played so well in the last two games was because the freshmen and the leaders performed at a high level. Whether that means they're going to perform at a high level for the rest of the season, it's really hard to say. I'm hopeful, especially with Sed, that he's just out of
the non-conference slump thing he had going on.
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say there?
Yes, that he's out of the slump.
Yeah, and I mean, he looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. I bet if he doesn't foul out, I think they win that Arizona game. But nonetheless, he fouled out. And it was a foul.
Shouldn't everybody get – do they – you should get a foul back when you go to overtime.
You get a mulligan foul?
Yeah, everybody gets a foul at overtime. I think that would be better.
Well, that didn't sound right. Everybody gets a foul. You get a foul.
Check under your chairs. You've all got a foul.
Everyone.
James Harden has five
free throws. James Harden. And we really have gone downhill. Nonetheless,
we're all over the place. I'm talking about James Harden.
The Utes have a game against Washington tomorrow on FS1.
Oh, hey, so Coach K was talking that up. He was saying, "Oh, this team's really good. They're one of the better teams. I think they might come out of the North," something like that. Is he just talking them up because they're the next team he's playing? You know better than me.
Hold that thought. I don't know that I have an opinion on Washington. Who cares about those guys? We haven't played them yet. No,
yeah, I mean, I have. That's my thing. I don't know much about them.
The unfortunate thing is, I literally just closed that link. Okay, so they are 1-0 in conference. I believe that win is over there. Rival Washington State. They are 10-4. So yeah, they're a good team. 10-4, scoring about 72 points a game, holding teams to 66. They're a good team. That's a good game. I mean, there's a reason it's on FS1, and I think we're in for a good team. I mean, look. As the Utes get to play these teams, right, they're getting Washington, and then Washington State's bottom of the barrel, right? So they're going to put all their effort into this Washington game on Thursday, get a good Pac-12 win right there, and then see what happens Saturday against Washington State. I mean, Washington State's a 500 team. The Utes are in that same realm, so that should be a close game. But in regards to the Pac-12, I think Utah should be better than Washington State, and so, but we'll see. I mean,
well, it's just one game, so it's hard to say.
The one thing I will say, look, you always want to set goals to improve. I want to see the Utes improve their defense. And as much as I know people don't like this, and we're running out of time, but the Jace Johnson is kind of cementing himself as that anchor to that defense.
Well, people want him to be the Utes boogeyman, but he plays D. And
well, he's got the best defensive rating on the team.
There's a
right now.
Lack of good defense on this team. There needs to be somebody who's clogging up the paint and making life difficult for people. And I think most of that is just age and strength. I think we got a lot of skinny young guys who don't know how to get – don't know how and don't have the bodies yet to get really physical and play defense that way. But Jace is a very important part of the team because of
that. So I know that there are times that myself and other fans out there cringe and you're just like, ugh, what was that? But we need to be – it's okay. We need Jace on the floor. Put the other four super efficient players with him and let them play.
Yep.
And that's what you got to do. But
sometimes you have a guy who doesn't play offense well because he plays defense well. That's okay.
And well, and I don't know whether we say he plays defense well or not, but right now he's the best big, like he's the big man. Like, we just need to accept it. Kind of like we accepted last week. We accepted our lower expectations.
Yes.
And we were happy.
This is an almost Buddhist journey of acceptance of this.
Let's keep our low expectations. Look, they're probably going to split this Washington series or lose both of them. Let's just keep the low expectations. I don't really think that, but low expectations.
That's hard to say.
It makes it for a much happier weekend, nonetheless. Yeah.
That's the fan curse: is raising expectations until you're disappointed.
Yeah,
you should. If you would like to see great example of the fan curse, go find Alabama fans saying that Nick Saban should be fired because he's had one bad loss in the last decade. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Please.
And they are dead serious. And I don't know who they think they're. I mean, like, I tell Utah fans, well, who's Utah going to hire? Who's the coach out there better than Nick Saban, Alabama fans? Besides one.
I'll say this.
Dabo Swinney.
Yeah, that's who's the better. That's the better guy right there. Yep. All right. Well, hey, it's been fun. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed the show. Once again, we would love your feedback at Utah Podcast on Twitter, at utalk@gmail.com, through email. Reach out to Joseph and I, and let's get those 5-star reviews. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Utalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UtalkPodcast or email @utalk@gmail.com.